So how's this for a blast from the past? It is 140 Christian days until the next end of the world.
Christian days?
Or 348 Mayan days.
Mayan. I think that would be Mayan.
Mayan, whatever. I'm from the Midwest. Forgive me.
It's okay. Forgiven. The Spanish teacher will correct you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's how it works. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. With me today is Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing just lovely.
And Becky. Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
It's an awesome day in Tacoma. We saw the Olympics.
Yeah, it's a very clear day. Clear. I had to go find my glasses. My sunglasses took some doing. So, trying to steal a thunder from the Mayan 2012 hysteria, a guy named Ronald Wineland, who considers himself specifically a prophet of God and like the chosen prophet of God. If I remember his website correctly, it was he is the sole prophet chosen by the God of Abraham to reign in the end times.
Oh wait, that God?
Yeah,
that's the God that we're talking about.
No, yeah, not the God of Madison or the God of I don't know.
Yeah,
the God of Abraham. And he is the head of the Church of God, PKG, which stands for Preparing for the Kingdom of God. And he claims that he is the pastor of God's church on earth and has been appointed by the God of Abraham to be, his end-time prophet and one of the two end-time witnesses. So there's another one out there somewhere. If you are, we encourage you to call 253-584-1480. And he says that Christ will return on May 27th, 2012.
Is that Memorial Day?
Yeah, something like that.
Memorial Day weekend or something like that.
Well, all right. Well, it's thematically appropriate, I guess.
That means that in Seattle there will be a big folk festival going on, right?
Yeah. Well,
that's your end of the world, right, Sam?
Yeah. I wish the world would end. And he hasn't, clearly he hasn't learned that this day and age, what you're mostly going to get from people is ridicule and scorn. If you'll remember to if you'll hearken back to our days of Harold camping and our long countdown, that actually started exactly close to a year ago this week.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then clearly, 348 Mayan?
That's right, Sam.
Okay. 348 days till the end of the world that we've been hearing about since 1912. and as Mike likes to say, this is this is the end of the world that Coast to Coast AM has really thrown down on, is it really has to be this one for them, or I guess their show ends. Unlikely.
Yay! Yeah. I don't know.
That would be tragic.
So
it's actually astronomically really interesting. I mean, it's the alignment of our I think equator with the Milky Way ecliptic.
Yeah.
So it's just an alignment of different.
Okay, that's not factually true. But
is it not?
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's just what they say. It's like it's like planetary alignment.
Okay.
Yeah. At least that's what I remember, if it's not true. So thank you, Bastian from The Interwebs, and also thank you to Mike from Monroe, Michigan. Both of you wanted to make sure that we talked about this before that we got to air today with this. And as you might expect, 2012 is a banner year for using prophecy to fail to understand how the world works. So we will be talking about it, and we will be moving, this is something we are going to continue to do because it is pretty hilarious and it is just such an important year. So let's move on to sort of a helpful, our usual segment at the beginning of the show. That'll be Scripture Says
What?
All right. We're going with the Bible this week, and it comes to us from 2 Corinthians.
It's actually thematic with our topic today.
It is.
Yeah.
And this is paragraph 6, subsection 14. I forget how this works.
Something like that, Sam.
Okay. And this is from the New International Version. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness?
Ooh,
boy!
I wonder if they realize who is in the darkness.
Yeah, yeah.
So are we the righteous or the wicked?
I'm pretty sure the Christians talk. This is their Bible. So
yes, there's another one that actually it's cool. It says, "What do righteousness and lawlessness have to do in common?" And I like that translation because I imagine
it makes
these
you sound sexy.
Well, these atheists that are like pew pew bang bang Wild West yeehaw and all lawless and everything and
yeah, and I just wonder how this goes together with the idea that they're supposed to go out and convert us all. If they won't actually talk to us or hang out with us,
how are you going to do that without being yoked?
Yeah, I know. It's very strange.
They must want to convert us first before they would ever consider dating us.
Oh, so just see how awesome they are with the, you know.
They don't want us to drag them down to hell with us, you know.
So. Ah, okay. So,
and the greatest thing about this is that I actually found this this quote, and Joe, you were familiar with this quote as well prior to us talking. But it was under, you know, what does the Bible have? What kind of relationship advice does the Bible give? And it was for wonderful, healthy, loving relationships.
And do you two remember that Pat Robertson actually used this verse once when somebody called into a show he was doing? Somebody called in and said, "Yeah, I'm dating an atheist. What do I do?" And he says, "Well, I'm sorry, but you're going to need to break." No, they were actually married, I think.
Yeah.
And Pat Robertson said, "I'm sorry, but what fellowship does light have with darkness? I'm sorry to say, but you're going to have to break this up, break this off."
Jeez.
So,
I think Mike wrote about that on the website.
And maybe they weren't married. I might have made a mistake, but
no.
Serious relationship.
Either a serious relationship or married, yeah. You got to break up because we are the light and they are all darkness and terrible people. And, you know, that's what it says. You know, stick to yourself, but convert the world, which suggests that the only valid way to convert the world is via violence or outbreeding people. Very strange. So if you have a scriptural verse that you would like to share with us, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red button to contact us, and let us know what that scripture is and why you think it's funny. As usual, non-biblical scriptures actually get priority, but we do talk about the Bible now and again, as we did today.
Indeed.
So I'd like to switch gears for a moment before we get on to our topic. We got this email yesterday, and it's a concept and a topic that's actually pretty near and dear to my heart. The interesting thing about this email is that it completely embodies the argument that I had for it. And this goes back to months and months ago when we talked about using the phrase coming out of the closet in the atheism community. And this email comes to us from Richard in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it goes like this. "I'm a gay man and an atheist. When I first heard someone say that telling someone you're an atheist feels like coming out, I was kind of pissed off. It was a college class on social problems, and I confronted the speaker during Q&A. While it was another student, I'm not really satisfied with the answer. I know the line saying that you're an atheist can get you kicked out of your home. You can lose your job, friends, family, all of that. I also know and agree that with that, you're not actually choosing to be atheists, given that we just don't find the arguments for God convincing. Even still, I cannot apply the term coming out to telling people I'm an atheist. I've done both. I have, in fact, come out of the closet as gay. When I apply coming out and closet to being an atheist, it feels as if I am diminishing and devaluing the pain I went through. Could it be that I'm feeling some sort of gay privilege crisis? Is there a big difference between these two things? I'm not trying to get it to change, and like I said, I understand the parallels. I just don't get the same empathy response from people who are openly atheists that I get from people who are openly gay. All I want is for this to get some discussion, more than just, yeah, there are parallels. I don't think they're the same thing, and I believe the differences deserve some discussion. Thanks for the show, Rich."
Rich, I think that this definitely deserves discussion, and I thank you for your email. One of the things that it's kind of interesting now to see that Rich may be reflecting upon himself, saying, am I suffering from gay privilege, you know, that I get to own this term, and I'm cautious of that. I think, Rich, the fact that you're cautious of this really says a lot to the strength of your character.
Yeah, I come from this from several directions. So from one, I mean, I actually avoided use of the term coming out of the closet to apply to atheism until I had a conversation about it that went into some depth with Greta Christina the first time she was on the show back during the Scan days.
Does Greta Christina use the term coming out of the closet with
And she recommends
atheists?
That we continue to use that term as well.
Okay.
And I was pretty convinced at the time. So, I mean, do you use the phrase or?
I guess I don't for myself. Well, actually, if somebody asked me if I came out of the closet, I would be fine phrasing it that way.
Yeah.
I just don't usually. I don't see a problem with it.
I did originally for a couple of reasons. For one is there's the idea that coming out of the closet with an ideological belief or with an understanding of the universe, like atheism, is clearly distinct from coming out of the closet with an alternative sexuality or whatever you want to call it these days. That always seems kind of weird, but
with a non-heterosexual orientation.
Thank you. Yeah. So they're very different things. They're completely separate, and they mean different things, but there are similarities because it's all people involved, and it is a minority status.
Definitely. I mean, I think, you know, Rich, you were saying, I want something more than there are parallels. I think that going into what the parallels are and what parts make people maybe uncomfortable with that is an important part of that discussion. And the parallel here is that, you know, you can be hidden in your status because it's not an outward appearance of whether you're an atheist or whether you are not heterosexual. And for that reason, I think that it's an apt term to say coming out. But again, there's also that that contrast that, you know, one person's experience in coming out of the closet as gay, merits you a lot more pain in your particular circumstance. Maybe it was more painful for you to come out as gay than it ever was to come out as atheist.
Yeah. I mean, the thing here is, we don't want to play, as Mike likes to say, oppression Olympics. We don't want to compare the entirety of the atheist movement coming out of its closet compared to, the sexuality movement coming out of their closet, the quest for civil rights. But when you do individual, at this point, when you do individual comparisons between religious people's stories and gay people's stories, and it runs the whole gamut. I've met gay people who had no trouble coming out as gay, but have had a terrible time coming out as atheists. I've met heterosexual atheists who've had a terrible time coming out as turning into an atheist. Rich is a great example of that.
Yeah, our friend Rich Lyons, who joins our show every so often and who runs Living After Faith podcast, there was definitely extreme pain and trauma involved in his transition to becoming an atheist.
Yeah,
that really can parallel a lot of the stories of gay individuals.
It there are significant parallels, and that's what part of what Greta Christina would talk about.
And I thought of one thing that is a difference. Becoming an atheist, if you're not one to begin with, is usually a process. It's usually a journey. I mean, actually, I think it is for everybody. Have you ever met someone that was a real believer and then the next day was an atheist? That doesn't happen. It takes a while to get to that point. While a person who's gay was always gay.
Right.
So there is a difference coming out of the closet in that respect if you're gay, opposed to, you know, that's why I don't say that I came out of the closet, really, because it wasn't like I suddenly came out one day and told everyone I was an atheist. I mean, it was a journey.
The phrase I find myself using is when I became publicly an atheist, because I was an atheist for a long time before I would talk to people about it.
Yeah.
And transitioning into being a public atheist and transitioning into an activist was certainly not a pain-free process. A lot of people have had it worse. I've had a relatively simple, it was a relatively simple transition, especially since I kind of timed it with a move, a cross-country move, which makes things a lot easier.
Mm.
But, you know, it was not a pain-free process, and I got some heat about it. But not the same kind of stuff that, clearly the story that Richard had. And From a name perspective, a nomenclatural perspective, I would like to have a unique term that talks about coming out of the closet as an atheist, so that contextually I can know what we're talking about right when the word is used. But this is a lot of facets, and I'd like to put this conversation back on the table, not just for today, but for a few more discussions on other episodes, because really a lot of what the atheism visibility movement is about now inherits a lot from the gay movement. And that's one of the things that Greta Christina likes to talk about, what we can learn from the gay.
Well, progressive social movements can often lay the groundwork for success in other areas and greater equality, greater, greater visibility and greater opportunity for people to live their lives as best they see fit.
Yeah, so thank you for this email, Richard. It's a meaningful conversation for me, and even though I seem to be making a bit of a hash of it today, but we'll be talking about it a lot more in the coming weeks, and I actually look forward to a follow-up email from you. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go into the break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about romance and atheism.
The Steampunk Exhibition Ball is almost here. Be a part of history on Saturday, January 28th at Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. Savor the sights and sounds of local music and sultry burlesque. Sip absinthe in the Green Fairy Parlor. Swirl in the Waltzing Ballroom and strut your stuff at the costume competition. General admission and VIP tickets now on sale through Stranger Tickets. For details, visit steampunkexhibitionball.com. That's steampunkexhibitionball.com. The ball is a benefit for the Center for Sex Positive Culture. Must be 18 or older with valid ID.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Really.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Hey, Ask an Atheist fans and foes. The conversation doesn't stop when our show ends. Visit the official Ask an Atheist discussion forums and have your say on everything from episodes of our show, religious insanity, claims of the supernatural, and even nerdy stuff like comic books or Doctor Who.
The Ask an Atheist forum is the new place to discuss the latest writings of Christopher Hitchens, the latest insanity from the Catholic Church, or even what piece of fruit non-believers are supposed to fear this week. Visit us at forum.askanatheist.tv. Again, that's forum.askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And that was a fun discussion. But before we get into the next thing, I do want to say that this is Season 7. It's a new year. We've been on the radio a year. And there have been a lot of people who've helped us out. And I want to take a moment. I can't think individually right now. We're working on that list. But thank you, those of you on the internet and those of you here in Tacoma who are helped us out and helped make Season 7 a reality. So we'll be with you through the whole season and beyond. But thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
So today we were going to talk about atheists dating. How do we handle the question of religion or your own non-religion in a dating context, a romance context, and beyond? Since, well, Sam, you and I are sort of in that.
We're in the and beyond phase.
And beyond phase. Joe, you and your wife are in the and beyond phase.
Yeah, far beyond.
Yes. but we get a fair number of emails to us talking about, you know, how do you go about dating, or, oh, I like this girl and she happens to be a preacher's kid, things like that. And so we did a little brainstorming, saying, well, how important is religion in dating, and you know, where do we go on this? And so we thought that we'd bring you some of our thoughts on this today. You know, and I think to, you know, start out, couples have you know, oftentimes you know, considerations and things like dating and then later on down the road raising a family, and there can be a point of contention between people who don't share the same views on religion. And so, you know, for some folks, couples having a general agreement about the origin of the cosmos or how things work or how the world works can be a really good thing to start a relationship on, but it doesn't always happen.
Well, that is kind of how we started out, wasn't it?
With the similarities or the not in agreement?
Not in agreement.
Not in agreement. Yeah. I would say that as well. Yes, Sam and I were at the beginning of our relationship not sort of in that same place in terms of our understanding about how the world worked. And yeah, how about you, Joe?
Well, I actually was a Christian up until, let's see, about 2002, 2003. And I don't know if you want me to go into my story now, but...
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I went to Catholic school for about 12 years, and I thought it might be good just to tell you a little bit about where I was in life before I met someone. So my story is about me being a Christian dating an atheist, not the other way around.
Wow.
So Catholic school, 12 years, but I still... the good thing, though, is I was pretty open-minded. I had doubts. I think that helped. I wasn't a fundamentalist. I wasn't hardcore that, oh, I'm right, everybody else is wrong, and going to hell, and that kind of thing. Hell was actually one of the reasons I had doubts. I was like, that doesn't seem moral to me.
Right.
There was a lot of other problems I had with things that just didn't make sense. Sexuality was another one. Things they taught us in Catholic school about sexuality didn't make sense to me, especially when I went to college.
Yeah, yeah.
Teaching that masturbation is wrong. And then I took a human sexuality class in college that totally contradicted that. So I had my doubts, but I still very much believed in Jesus and believed he was the Son of God. And it didn't come up at all when I first started dating an atheist. She's from Austria. She was studying abroad. And didn't really come up at all at first. I didn't really care to talk about it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point we got really serious. We totally fell in love. And I realized now we might need to start to talk about this because it was something that was kind of important in my life. And I knew that I wanted to actually study the Bible and Bible history more. And I thought there's a chance I might become a really serious Christian, like
right.
really dedicated to it.
That's a path I see a lot is, so some people's path to atheism is they're Christians or they're whatever religion they are. Like, I want to be really knowledgeable about my religion. And then they take a close yeah. look at it and...
And you say, huh, my religion doesn't make a lot of sense.
A little familiar, actually.
Just a little bit familiar. I was definitely raised, I mean, in a pluralistic, but definitely Jewish household and family and whatnot. And did a lot of study. I sort of prided myself on the intellectual approach to Judaism. And that became very clear whenever I was dating someone. That was very clear right up front, I think. And I think that's a contrast between you and me, Joe. You said that, you know, with you and the person that you were dating, it didn't really come up initially until No. you got very serious. Mm-hmm. Now, Sam, what did our friends say about you or me when they're saying, oh, yeah, I'm kind of interested in Becky, you know?
I don't really want to take away from Joe's story here, but the phrase they used was super Jew. that Becky is a super Jew, and you're an irascible, ornery atheist, and everybody thought it was going to be...
Oh, and you'll get on great!
Well, it was either they'll get along great, or it'll be irresistible force, immovable object type situation, and it sort of went from there, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Well, so, I just one thing, though, Becky, I'm really curious. I mean, at that time, were you a believer in God and believed in the doctrines of Judaism?
Well, the doctrines of Judaism is kind of an interesting way of phrasing it, because there's a lot of flexibility for actual belief within the umbrella of Judaism.
Okay.
And you know, but I had little tastes of mysticism, and I think what I kind of came to recognize is that I was culturally Jewish and very learned within Judaism, but I was more of a pantheist than anything else.
Well, that's how I labeled you. Is
pantheist, deist, sort of.
Yeah, you had sort of a... You didn't believe in the single humanoid God in the way that the Bible, the early books in the Bible say, which is what I was familiar with. And but you more were in the sort of God is in everyone and in everything sort of thing. And I said, yeah, that's really pantheism. That's not really...
But I'm like, yeah, but it's Judaism too.
It's not really in line with what your books say. And then I realized that culturally, not a lot of Jews in your end of the world actually believe that sort of stuff.
Right, so, right.
I mean, I asked that because it's not only interesting, but it also tells you something important about how... Is it likely your relationship's going to work well? Because if you are a fundamentalist, I think that your chances of working out a relationship with an atheist are a lot smaller.
Well, I think if I had been an Orthodox Jew, I wouldn't have even probably socialized with Sam.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would have been off the market to begin with. So yeah. you were studying to be you were studying Christianity, you were going to become really learned and deep in your religion. And then what happened?
Well, I actually wasn't studying it yet.
Okay.
But I wanted to. Well, so it was soon after I graduated college. And I was at a point where I was looking for a church to attend. So I was too busy with a new career and trying to find a church in the area to start going to. Mm-hmm. So I was trying out different churches. I wasn't to the point where I was really studying yet, but I wanted to do that eventually.
Right.
So when my relationship got really serious with who is now my wife, by the way, Fabia, that's when I realized we need to bring this up. We need to talk about it.
Okay.
And so I thought, you know, I think I already knew that she didn't really believe in God. I'm not sure how I knew that, but you know, she was kind of like, she describes herself as being a lot like other people that she socialized with and was friends with in Austria, in Vienna. She's from Vienna, or at least close to Vienna. They just didn't care about religion.
Right.
They didn't really, it wasn't interesting to them. A lot of them didn't really believe it, especially the myth, the superstitious claims. So, just not interesting to her. Unlike, you know, everybody here in this room, we love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is Jeremy and I do go on about how we're not religious people, but we're fans of religion because we find it so fascinating. They believe such weird and kooky things.
Yeah, and how can they believe that stuff? Yeah. It's interesting. A lot of her friends and her, that just not that interested. So that's probably one reason why it didn't really come up.
Mm.
But when I realized, what I thought to myself is, okay, I'm okay that she doesn't believe, but if we're going to commit long term, I thought I'm going to have to, I think she needs to be open-minded. That's what I decided.
Okay.
She needs to be open-minded to the possibility that there is a God and the possibility that Jesus is God and was God.
Clearly we have heard this before.
So,
so what did you find then when you did bring this up?
Well, I decided to, sit down and have a more serious discussion, and I asked her, do you at least consider it possible, however unlikely, that Jesus really was the Son of God and still is? And and she didn't really have to hesitate. She didn't really hesitate. She said, no, I don't. And I was actually shocked by that answer, because I was always thinking, well, being open-minded means you're open to any possibility.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe this is a language problem. I mean, this is her second language, English, and maybe I need to rephrase it. So I asked her several different ways, still got the same answer every time. She started to hesitate a little more because she started realizing this is really bothering me. So, but she didn't, she wasn't hesitating because she doubted her answer. She stayed true to herself, and that's what I really admire about her. That's one thing, anyway, that I admire about her.
I think what this kind of speaks to, Joe, is it's reflective of, you know, this hope that sometimes we hold out for our prospective partners. What are we holding out hope for? That, oh, well, maybe they'll really change. And there's a lot of relationship advice out there that says, oh, never hope for, you know, or never marry someone, never date someone knowing, you know, or thinking that you can change them. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes when it comes to religion, we say, oh, well, it's okay because they're an awesome person. They're really wonderful. And so they must come around eventually to see that Jesus is the Son of God, or that, you know, he'll convert for me and for our family.
The interesting thing is that it's probably important for me to point out that I didn't need her to change. She needed to be open-minded, which meant that if I do pursue studying this and find out that it is myth, then I would be the one that would change.
In this case, being open-minded could be construed as a change in her, because she clearly had made her decision.
Yes, true. But what I'm trying to get at is that it was more important that if we do pursue study or truth to try to find the truth, that she would be able to change her mind if the evidence called for it.
Right.
And I knew I was. I knew that I was, at that point in my life, I knew that I could change my beliefs if the evidence called for it.
Okay, so you asked her several times, and you got the same answer every time.
Yeah.
Where did it go from there?
I realize we have a serious problem. she said that I became cold towards her after that for a while. And I had to think about it quite a bit. I struggled a lot. Mm-hmm. And I finally came to the conclusion that, you know, every relationship's different. If she was an American living here, it would have been very different. It would have been equally as difficult, but I probably wouldn't have thought about breaking off the relationship.
Right.
I could still keep trying. You know, we could keep trying to work things out. But she had to go back to Austria.
Ooh. And then, yeah, that definitely puts a limiter on the kind of conversations you can have.
So I'm like, either we do a long distance relationship, which we can't do that forever, or we need to commit long term and move in together and maybe get married or something. So I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? So I realized, since this is this open-mindedness thing may be a serious problem, and I need to really evaluate, is that too big of a risk to take, to commit to someone long term? Or should I end the relationship? It was kind of those two things. So,
that's such a key point, I think, in a lot of relationships that we hear about between people, that, one person may be an atheist and the other not, or one person questioning whether, their given religion is true, or I just don't know sort of what's behind this, and I can't be sure of it. And that's a really big sticking point for some people within the U.S., I think, because in contrast to Austria, it's so prevalent, it's so omnipresent. The discussion of religion and the exposure to religion is around us all the time.
Yeah.
And so it may be something that comes up more often between people in the U.S. and relationships in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I know just that open-mindedness sort of trope that we hear so very often.
I have more to say about that too.
It's very difficult to sort of get your mind around the concept of open-mindedness. And I will say that for me, my foray into dating non-Jewish people, I was sort of able to make that transition because I still held out this little hope under the guise of open-mindedness of, oh, well, if they really like me, then there's always the possibility that he'll convert to Judaism and it'll be fine and hunky-dory.
Talk about that for a minute, though. But when did things begin? Where did it go from there? When did things begin to change?
Well, when I made the decision that I need to figure out if this is too big a risk to take or not, mm-hmm. I'm like, what am I going to do? I've got to figure this out pretty quickly. We can't continue on forever with a long distance relationship. So I thought, all right, maybe, you know, it was actually really hard because I actually thought that it was over. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to throw it all away so quickly. So I was clinging on to anything I could, and I thought, maybe I should just do a quick investigation into this whole Bible and historicity of the Bible stuff.
Okay.
I mean, let's see what happens. And so I made a trip to Barnes & Noble, and I swear, as I was heading to Barnes & Noble, I totally thought what I would find. I knew I was going to find there was lots of evidence for the claim that Jesus was the Son of God. I really did.
Right.
I knew what I was going to find.
But you're on this show, so that suggests that you found something else.
Right. So I obviously didn't know.
Right.
But I knew that's what I was going to find, so I knew that this was going to be the end of our relationship. Mm. And so it was bittersweet, because it was sad heading towards the bookstore. At the same time, it was exciting, because I'd never really done this before. I never really studied this before, so Catholic school doesn't expose us to other scholars, mm-hmm. that say things contradictory to Catholic doctrine.
So what did you find?
So I get there at the bookstore, and I just go to the history section, and I randomly grab a big stack of books, as much as I could carry, probably. I made sure they had stuff to do about Jesus, so like history of Jesus, or I think one was like The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man by Robert Price, and a couple other books by like Bart Ehrman and John Crossan, all very reputable scholars. They're historians. They have either doctors of divinity or PhDs.
Right.
I sit down and just start skimming really quickly just to try to see what did they conclude. And the first book, basic we concluded it's a myth. and there's not a good reason to consider the Bible historically reliable.
Right.
Okay. I'm like, okay, interesting. Very interesting. Okay, second book, same conclusion.
Ouch.
Third book, same. Every single book, and I'm not joking, every book had the same basic conclusion, and I literally was shocked. I couldn't believe. I didn't think that's what I would find.
And you were actually looking for evidence to support your own, you know, foregone conclusion, and yeah. You still couldn't even find
so
that.
So how did that change your relationship at that point?
Oh, it helped immensely.
Yeah.
Because, well, for one thing, it was also a worldview shattering, and it was actually exhilarating. I felt finally the world made sense. I'm like, hell really is immoral. I don't have to try to make hell sound moral anymore. It really is an immoral thing. It doesn't exist. Well, I didn't think that exactly, that it doesn't exist, but I had doubts that it existed, obviously, right. After that.
And but then you got dislodged from the groupthink, it sounds like.
From the groupthink?
From the Christian groupthink. From the, you know, from the idea that this is true and that, you know, you got outside of the idea that you have to conflate or that you have to solve this problem between the immorality of hell and the morality of God. Is that you now have this external perspective that you didn't had before. It got you out of the Christian groupthink.
It did.
And then you realized you didn't have to justify hell any longer.
It did, yeah. And you know what I think helped maybe more so than the arguments that these scholars made? It was just actually seeing there's other people that doubt this stuff and have good reason to.
Right.
I wasn't alone. All those times, all those years I doubted, I wasn't alone.
Right.
And so so when I went, you know, later on in our relationship, I realized I don't think Fabio was closed-minded at all. I mean, think about this. If someone came up to you and asked you, do you think it's quote-unquote possible that Mordor exists and Gandalf is coming to save you? Or Zeus, he's real, and Hercules is his son.
Yeah.
You know, what would a Christian say? They would say, no, that's not possible. That's ridiculous.
Even an open-minded Christian.
And an open-minded Christian would say that.
Yeah, and for her, it was just as much a factual context as it was a cultural context, is that you were basically coming at her with what she had dismissed long ago as fairy stories.
Yeah.
Saying, and I truly and really believe this, and there was just that, it sounds like there was just that disconnect.
I would say that's true, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you asked how did our relationship go after that? I mean, I can sum that up really quick.
Please.
I swear, it seems like the next day I went and bought a wedding ring and then flew off, bought a plane ticket to Vienna and proposed.
That is fantastic.
I mean, it wasn't that soon, but it was pretty quick that thereafter I was like, I have no problem.
No matter the speed of how you got to Vienna, but it seems like the decision in your mind was pretty much made up at that point. Yeah, to move forward the relationship, because that block that you had been...
Yeah, solved. I was like, okay, there's still a... I was very far from being an atheist at that point, but...
Sure.
I would have even... If you asked me after I went to the bookstore that day, do I think it's possible Jesus was God, I would have said, maybe, but not very likely. But I thought to myself, okay, now I know that the risk that I'm going to one day become a big believer in Jesus is now much lower.
Right.
That probability is a lot lower. I'm willing to take the risk now because I love her and I'm not going to throw away this relationship. So it was a huge relief, and this went forward from there with our relationship.
Things are going pretty good, it sounds like.
Yeah, two kids and
all right.
Happily married for like 7 years or so.
Very nice. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go into a break, and when we get back, I'm going to talk about how Becky tried to convert me and how badly it went.
I want to hear that.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy, just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're talking about relationships and atheism.
I just still have such a smile on my face after the conclusion of Joe's story. You know, I went to the bookstore and it feels like the very next day. All right, bought an engagement ring, ticket to Vienna.
it's such a... I'm so used to the story being there that I walked away from religion and I had to completely rebuild my social framework and find new friends. And you may, and clearly you had to do that on some level, but you were walking, you were moving towards something new in your life as well. And that's a really positive story, and I really like that.
Yeah.
So going back to us a little bit.
Yeah, Sam, you would
want to hear your story too.
Give a lowdown on me and you.
Well, my friends, my very close friends, I talk about the pagan and the Mormon that I married, and this is them. They're very close friends. They met you, and within like I guess 5 or 10 minutes, Dirk was thinking, "Wow, Sam's really gonna like her." So
he just also knew that there would be some fireballs thrown back and forth too.
Right? Yeah, heated discussions, things like that. But as you might imagine, I sort of enjoy heated discussions. So mm-hmm. I was looking forward to it. I like debate is really a part of my life, and I look forward to that sort of thing. And so they said, Sam, you know, she's super Jewish, and I'm quoting, and rather sensitive about it. So you need to watch what you say a lot more closely than you usually do. And they were all worried that within 5 minutes of meeting you, I was going to, like, accidentally say a racial slur or something like that, which I never do.
Or else I was going to, like, call the ADL and have you, like, strung up by the heels or something. I don't know.
But I mean, this was the when I'm hanging out with them, this is the bosom of my family. This is the environment in which I feel, in which I felt free to really discuss what was bothering me at the time. And at the time, this was during my transition to public atheism. So I lived and worked around, you know, Tempe and Mesa and Scottsdale, where there's a lot of weird religious stuff going on. So I'd come home to dinner brimming with anger about the kind of crap I had to deal with that week. And they basically said, "You're going to have to cut that out if you start hanging out with Becky." And I said, sure, I will. And I did for about 5 minutes because you started specifically asking me questions about it.
I think I did. I don't know. That's a little bit fuzzy, truthfully, at this point.
Right. Well, yeah, it was 6 or so years ago, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things worked out, and we started casually dating. And I said, you got to be okay with what I believe, you know, with my rationalism, with my skepticism, with my atheism and stuff like that. And you, at the time, were saying some kind of hippy-dippy things.
I was. I came from a sort of an environment where people's beliefs and sort of religious affiliations were very fluid.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really had an interface with atheists very much at all.
That you know of.
That I know of. I hadn't interfaced in that respect with atheists. I had done a lot of interfaith and pluralistic work between, you know, moderate religious groups, especially in college. And, you know, I would, you know, go to, you know, Advent and play in the Vespers concert, and my friends would come and support me while I did, you know, teachings on Shabbos and things like that. So I didn't really have that understanding of atheists, and I sort of always held that, okay, yeah, it's just another one of those things, another religious preference, and you can sort of float fluidly between one and the next. And I kind of withheld that comment from you, probably very inexpertly.
It became clear that you just saw what I was talking about as just another, as you know, as another hair color.
Yes.
If it was.
Yes.
And I needed to show you that bald is not a hair color in this case.
Precisely.
To use that metaphor. And one of the things that I said specifically is, I'm not going to try and convert you. I don't want you to be an atheist. At the time, you seemed very happy with your religious beliefs, and you were a very interesting person. And like I say on the show, I think religious people are capable of morality. I think religious people are more moral than their books. And you were, to me, a shining example of that.
Well, and beside the fact my beliefs didn't really align with the typical beliefs of Jews, necessarily.
Well, like, with most of the Jews I've met, they actually aligned pretty good at this point.
Okay, all right.
And you said, yes, let us not convert each other. And then we would have, but let's have conversations about religion. And then it became clear, as the conversations went on, as you tried to introduce me to various aspects of your religion, and try to get me to cook for various holidays in your religion.
Hey, you liked that Passover challenge.
I like a challenge. I enjoy a challenge, that's true. I made
French onion matzo ball soup.
Yeah, that was fun. I made like 18 gallons of it. But that you weren't really serious about the not wanting me to come to your religion. That was really something you wanted. And that was one of the things was what when I finally met your family, they're talking about, hey, you're finally dating somebody who's not a Jew. I mean, are you going to fix that? Is that a problem, or what's going on here?
I think my parents or my family weren't really concerned with, you know, Becky, you must go and convert Sam. It was just like, huh, isn't that what you're sort of, they expected me to do that because of who I was and sort of what place my Judaism had played in my own life.
Yeah.
And I think you had a very interesting interaction with my father shortly thereafter.
Am I allowed to talk about this on
I
the
think
air?
So. That's okay. Fine.
All right. So this was the second time I had gone out to Cruces to hang out, and I, you know, they had this really nice house, and I get waken up by your mom. It's like
brunch out on the porch.
Yeah, you know, we're having brunch on the porch. It's Peel and Eat Shrimp. If you want to come out, and I'm like, oh, awesome! I love Peel and Eat Shrimp. But I am just waking up. The logic hasn't really fired up yet. You know, I haven't had my morning caffeine, so I'm out there. I'm eating Peel and Eat Shrimp with this great cocktail sauce, talking to your dad. And, how's it going, Dr. Friedman, blah, blah, blah. And I go, wait, and I'm like, I'm peeling a shrimp and I'm looking at it. I'm like, wait, shellfish? Wait a minute. Hey, I thought you couldn't eat this. And he's like, oh, I'm an atheist. I don't care.
Oh, really?
I'm like, wait, what?
And actually, I don't think that my father has ever used that word in front of any of his family
and
members.
He still hasn't to this day, which is why I don't really like telling the story. But I think, you know, it was really, To find out later that day, when I relayed that conversation to you, that he doesn't use that word and never really described himself that way, but he did with me, it really was like, I mean, clearly he was trying to reach across the divide there and have
a
real
way,
conversation.
In a way that I really hadn't been up till that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
And that was, I mean, even before that point, I decided I really liked your dad, and not just because it's your dad, but he was actually kind of a cool guy. I just decided I liked him at that Mexican restaurant we went to, actually.
Yes.
After our second pitcher of sangria. but at that point, yeah, I was like, wow, I felt really honored. And
it's a really interesting kind of thing that, you know, when you're dating across the aisle, so to speak, there's a lot more that goes into it than just necessarily the two individuals. There can be a lot of sort of family things that weigh into it. What does each person bring in terms of their family background and their raising and how much you know, how much import the family sort of has on that.
And then, you know, we go home and you'd talk about it, and that kind of set your conversion plans back a little bit to realize that your dad felt that way. And then at that point, you would start bringing me questions, and it was a bit like Duck Hunt. Is that you would have these conversations with me that were ducks, and I would just sort of laser them down one at a time, saying, "No, that's a logical fallacy. That's not actually true. The evidence doesn't support that." And then, because I was the only one really saying that to you, it was, for you, you just suddenly engaged in a way that I don't think you had before, and you're like, yeah, I think you're right, actually.
So that may have been my bookstore moment, Joe? I don't know.
Yeah, and what I'm still baffled by is I don't really remember at which point you decided you were an atheist. I mean, you were...
I don't really remember either, which may be, you know, it's what you were referring to, Joe, in the beginning of the show. It's sort of that personal journey.
Yeah.
And discovery and sort of thinking stuff. And it doesn't have to be necessarily a painful one or a sudden one.
Yeah, and I don't remember when I called myself an atheist either.
Yeah.
But I do remember when I stopped calling myself a Christian, and that was at the bookstore.
That's really interesting. I'm still churning.
And I started calling myself an agnostic right after reading The God Delusion.
Okay.
That was my next pivotal moment.
Yeah.
That quickly led me towards atheist.
Yeah. The God Delusion was a pivotal moment for a lot of people,
yeah.
I think. So. But even you've never read it, though. I don't think you have.
No.
Yeah. But you were
maybe that's why I never call myself agnostic.
when I came up here and my friends introduced me to the atheism movement, and said, you know, you should work with these guys, they could really use whatever weird things you do.
I think I used the word atheist ally for a while.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? I like these folks. It all makes sense to me. I'm not really finding a synagogue that I like so well.
Well, and then there was that one thing that really changed your mind with that synagogue in Scottsdale. When
I did. I had a pretty negative experience where a family had invited me for, you know, Sabbath dinner for, you know, a series of months and whatnot. And then they saw me again. They said, come on, you know, come on over. And I said, well, I'd like to bring, you know, my boyfriend, Sam. And Sam sounds like a nice Jewish name, right? Okay, that's fine. And, you know, Sam, because I think that, you know, it would be important for Sam to know and understand and experience what a Sabbath dinner's like.
And at that point, I was like, yes, I will go. I mean, if this is becoming serious, by that point, it was like, I should know something about what Becky believes.
Yeah.
So I was ready to go.
And it turned out they wanted me to come to Sabbath dinner. They did not want him to come. And that to me was really painful because it's a time where you share family and friends and people you love. It's a happy time. It's a dinner. And they didn't really want him in their house at this time, at this, you know, religious moment of the week. And I thought that was just...
It wasn't that they didn't want to invite me sight unseen. It wasn't... They just didn't want to invite me.
Yeah.
So this got a bit more personal than I was expecting, to be honest with you.
Well, dating and romance is personal,
yeah,
isn't
I suppose.
It? Touches on those really sort of fundamental questions about where you as a, you know, sort of an adult want to lead your life.
Yeah, yeah. And
so we've kind of heard two different sort of stories today, and we'd love for more people to share if they've got other things to say. We love you to email in at askanatheist.tv, and you can select the button and give us some feedback. We might share some of your stories as follow-ups, or, you know, be happy to answer your questions as follow-ups.
I got a really quick email. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I hope that you listeners out there don't hear these two stories and think, oh, here, both of these stories, somebody converted, you know, or somebody.
Right.
You know, that's not going to always happen.
No, no.
I've been listening actually recently to a lot of different people on other podcasts and stuff, where the Christian doesn't change or the atheist doesn't change. I mean, there's some people that have been married where it's an atheist and a Christian married for like 14 years.
Yeah.
And it's still that way.
So. But that is the thing, is I was fully ready to, I'm used to being in a situation, and at that point I was in a situation where I was the only atheist I knew. So I was bound and determined to have a meaningful relationship with somebody who wasn't an atheist, because at the time I felt like it was my only option.
And I think for a lot of people that don't know atheists, or people that are places where there aren't a lot of atheists around, that is your only option.
Maybe. But then there are people, like, this is a conversation we have with Mike. Mike doesn't really want to walk down that road. He wants to date another atheist. And I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean.
And I could, there's good reasons to take that position with your own relationships.
I think there's very good reasons to take that position. And I don't want to say this, but if I had to remake that decision now that I'm finally with somebody who believes as I do, I can see the freedom that I have now. That I didn't have before when I was the only one that I knew. The way I have a freedom to express myself and say what's really on my mind, rather than constantly worrying that I'm going to offend someone's morality and sensibilities and beliefs when something cheeses me off or when something makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. So, do we have time to get to that email, Sam, or we might have to chuck it for the next episode?
I think we might have to. Yeah, it might have to be the next episode. But this is a conversation. This is one of those things. I'm looking forward to the feedback we get from this one. This could be another coworkers type thing where we just keep getting really great stories about this. And thank you, Joe, for bringing that story to us today.
And that is, like, great. Thanks for letting me tell it, too.
Oh, no problem.
I just hope that there's people out there that can relate a little bit or hear something that kind of speaks to them. So I like personal stories myself. So.
All right. My name is Sam Olby. With me today was Joe DiStefano and Rebecca Friedman. Our music is by Chris Coleman. Writing today was by Libby Grant. Our production assistants are Mike Gillis and Darren Garvin. Our post show is at Doyle's. Ask an Atheist is an NED in production. Our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. And our website is askanatheist.tv. We'll see you at Doyle's in about an hour.
John Russell. KLA.